We're talking with Roslyn Biggs. Dr. Biggs, of course, from College of Veterinary Medicine, also with Extension here at Oklahoma State University. You led a discussion today and talked about where we are right now on traceability, on animal ID. And I thought, you know, you really laid out the framework really well, because there's so many considerations and so many people that are interested in this subject or have a stake in this subject within the industry and those that consume our product.
Absolutely. We've got multiple segments of the industry that are impacted by animal disease traceability. And we've got a lot to think about as far as designing the best situation to, you know, there's no one size fit all for every segment in every location across the United States, but multiple facets that we've got to consider. We've got to consider the investment at the level of for technology. I think we need to be thinking about what our consumer demands are. What are export markets really guiding us that we need to do to maintain those, mm-hmm. and of course from the veterinary type standpoint, the animal health standpoint, that is ultimately reliant upon a good traceability system. Should we have a foreign animal disease incursion here in the United States, that we need to be able to respond. We need to be able to respond quickly. We need to be able to know where those animals are, have been, who they've been exposed to, that sort of thing, to try to stamp out disease as quickly as we can and be able to rebound from that, both domestically on our markets and internationally.
Know that, you know, a lot of the discussion right now kind of centers around what USDA has proposed, whether or not they're going to be able to do that in a timely manner or it's going to have to be rethought a little bit. They are clearly wanting to move the industry toward using electronic ID. Why is that?
Well, I think from their perspective, from the animal health perspective, it has to do with that ability to respond and trace that animal quickly, as well as the inputs that go into, you know, so much of our world is becoming, we've got electronics that do so many things for us. And if we can put into place electronic ID that cuts down on readers that get the number right every single time, that can do it, you know, I read it and then it's sent to all the places it needs to be sent. Those kind of technologies really get us to the point we need to be should we have foreign animal disease here in the U.S.
Of course, one of those first arguments of folks that are scared or concerned or angry about this is somebody's going to take my information and use it against me.
Right. And I think that's a, That's a valid concern for most people. Most people are very, very private. I think in agriculture, probably even more so. And that's something that has to be a consideration when we're talking about the program, is who holds the information, how much information is going to be collected to begin with, and then who has access to it. And so, we've got several different pilot projects going on here in the U.S. to look at just those things, and also look at a number of other characteristics of the traceability system that they're trying to get lined out.
Cattle Trace, one that obviously we've got some interest in Oklahoma and up in Kansas. You alluded to the fact that they are collecting only a limited amount of information, but they've also got some real protocol in place to make sure that information is protected.
Absolutely. They're set up as a nonprofit, and so that puts them in a different category rather than a government entity that might be potentially open to, you know, FOIA requests or other information type requests. And they're really their big focus is on animal health. There's lots of other benefits that folks can consider when it comes to traceability, but their focus is animal health. Mm-hmm. And so they're looking at really collecting fairly limited data, you know, the date and time that that animal is ID'd and where it is ID'd and the number. And so that it's not something that, you know, there's folks that have a concern about liability associated with ID and then potentially being exposed should something bad happen on down the road. And that the cattle trace folks, I think, have taken a they've designed their pilot in a way to try to address a lot of those concerns many individuals would have from the get-go. And I think what they have seen, they'll have a kind of an update towards the end of November in Manhattan, and it'll be interesting to see what information they can share there. But as I understand it, having pretty darn good participation from producers, and of course they're looking at ultra high frequency tags, which is the tags that are more slanted towards speed of commerce movement and. You know, that's another discussion, of course, of what frequency is going to be best. Right. So
you know, at the end of the day, you know, when we start thinking about what this means back to that cow-calf operator, you know, it's a typical size operation, maybe 100 mama cows, somewhere in that range. What is this? What will ID really mean to them as far as extra work, extra costs, benefits?
Sure. I think, you know, as we look at extra cost, you know, the most obvious one is we were buying a tag that maybe we weren't otherwise. There are, you know, what's proposed currently is there will be some government funding share on that part of electronic ID tags. But it's still an expense for producers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then to decide how best can I use, you know, can I use this technology? Can I use these tags to a producer's advantage? Mm-hmm. Meaning, can I do things like track an individual all the way through from birth to harvest and get back information that will help me make better decisions, breeding decisions, nutrition decisions, all of those sorts of things to really have improved herd management. And, you know, those are things that I think producers need to, especially cow-calf folks, need to be thinking about is electronic ID has been proposed or, you know, dates have been established and how do I, if I'm going to make the investment in it and ultimately I'm going to have to probably some way or another, mm-hmm. how do I use that potentially and how do I capitalize on it to make the best of it?
Right. But with that said, the new proposals still leave out a huge part of our population, those animals under 18 months of age, those stocker cattle, calves, yearlings, and in a lot of cases, they're very mobile. And from an animal disease point of view, I would think that continues to be a major worry.
I think from the animal health official side of things, it's a big gap for them. And so it's, you know, something that continues to be discussed as to when and if that particular segment of the industry will come in line with, let's say, the breeding cattle that are currently required to have official identification to move across state lines, at what point is appropriate to have that group join the mix.
And I guess what going back to what you said about maybe getting that information, that production information that would be useful to the cow-calf man, maybe that's where we get some push or some pull on some of those younger animals then.
Well, I think that makes a lot of sense from the perspective mm-hmm. that I want to be able to, and you know, many producers are doing that right now, that they're maintaining ownership all the way through, or they're maintaining you know, they're keeping tabs on those animals all the way through, and mm-hmm. and that information can be useful if you'll you know, if you're in a position to take it and then interpret it, analyze it, and put it into play right. in your program.
In your breeding operation.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Thank you, Dr. Biggs. Dr. Rosalind Biggs from the College of Veterinary Medicine at Oklahoma State University. On the Oklahoma Farm Report, I'm Ron Hayes.